GX on Agriculture with Rod McDonald.
Hey, good afternoon all. Welcome to the Friday edition of GX on Agriculture. Ahead on the program today, well, first off, we'll chat with Precision Weather Meteorologist Phil Spivak about just a dandy day we're enjoying here today, plus temperatures, and Phil will tell us how long we can look forward to this warm trend continuing. Jim Everson is president of the Canola Council of Canada. If you were with us for yesterday's program, I told you that Richardson International has announced it will not provide core funding to the Canola Council in 2018. Also, pulling funding from the Flax Council of Canada and Soy Canada. I spoke with Jim Everson, again, president of the Canola Council of Canada, about that this morning. We'll hear from Jim on the program today. Also, the Canadian Meat Council is weighing in on the comprehensive and progressive Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership. Of course, the TPP suffered a setback when the U.S. pulled out of that agreement. However, there are others that want to see the TPP continue, and certainly Canada can be counted among that group. Marcus Mattinson is a communications manager with the Canadian Meat Council, and he'll explain on the program today why it's so important that Canada is part and package of the TPP. First, the Agriculture Weather Outlook. It's a presentation of Yorkton Raymore and Watrous, New Holland, and Sean Prahika, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
And it's time now for Precision Weather with meteorologist Phil Spivak. Phil, it certainly feels like spring today. How long do we expect to continue to enjoy these spring-like conditions?
Well, as far as the positive numbers, today is likely it. But as far as above normal readings go, as far as this not bitterly cold, well, we've got that through the weekend and likely into the start of the week as well. From there, a gradual decline, but it is going to be very gradual. So we should be in pretty decent shape for a little while. What will happen, though, is we'll just stop the melting. That's what's going on during the daytime hours, which becomes problematic at night when it freezes back over. But this afternoon, we've got the melting going on near 3 degrees. Winds west to southwest, 15 to 25, occasionally as high as 30. So the winds are still up, but wind chill really not a major issue. When the temperatures are single digits, even single digits below zero, you still need a stronger wind to get a huge factor. Tonight, some cloud cover rolls in. It'll stay dry, but we cloud over. We drop off to minus 6. Winds still up at 10 to 20, but we'll lose those higher end 20 to 30 ones. Tomorrow, cloud cover gets back to some sunshine. We'll be around minus 2 during the afternoon, so staying below freezing. A little sun may still allow for some localized melting, but nothing too widespread with that temperature still just below freezing. Westerly wind tomorrow, 15 to 25. That'll give us a wind chill between minus 7 and minus 10. A couple of flurries move in tomorrow night and into Sunday. This cold sagging southward, not doing so in any sort of hurry. It's just sort of trailing, and that's because the storm system that's driving it is waiting on a second kick, and until it gets that kick over the weekend, it's just simply going to sort of stay in place, slightly dropping southward, but overall not a lot of energy with it, and as a result, nothing to really push it until we get that system moving. So a few flurries around for Saturday night, a few flurries around into Sunday. Temperature minus 8 overnight, back down or back up to minus 5 on Sunday with the cloud cover. And then we do get the front finally sliding out, but it leaves us with is a fairly unstable and cool air mass, but not cold, just cool, still well above average. Minus 4, minus 5 Monday and Tuesday with on and off flurries through the day. We're just as likely, though, to see some breaks of sunshine as we are to see those flurries. And then as the sort of in-between air mass gets ready to push aside midweek, we'll get a little bit more of a decline back to around average for the second half of the week.
All right, Phil, thank you. Now the temperature roundup. It's minus 11 this hour in the Paw, minus 9 in Hudson Bay, minus 8 in Swan River. Dauphin minus 4, everywhere else, at zero or better. Brandon, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, all 2. Roblin, Saskatoon, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, 1. Regina at 0. In the Yorkton-Melville region, it's mainly sunny. The wind is west-northwest at 26. Relative humidity, 80%. Our temperature up 1 in the past hour, now 2 degrees. Yesterday's high was 3 and the low minus 8. Our provincial temperature extremes in Saskatchewan range from a high of 10 at Maple Creek yesterday down to minus 17 at Prince Albert. In Manitoba, McCreary was the provincial hotspot at 5. Barron's River, the coldest place in the province yesterday, minus 23. Normals for this date, daytime highs minus 12, overnight lows near minus 24, so certainly we're blowing those normals out of the water. Sunrise this morning was at 8:44. The sun will set this afternoon at 5:17. Again, our current temperature is 2 degrees. Told you yesterday that Winnipeg-based Richardson International has announced it will not provide funding in 2018 for the Canola Council of Canada, the Flax Council of Canada, and Soy Canada. Senior company officials indicated the value of membership in the groups has fallen short of the financial cost. Richardson reportedly contributed a total of about $1 million annually to the three groups. Jim Everson is president of the Canola Council of Canada.
It's not a surprise in a sense that the Canola Council has been discussing issues in terms of the priorities for the Canola Council and some of the issues that have been raised by Richardson for a period of time. And we have at the Canola Council, you know, a very strong value chain together, making up of exporters, processors, the farmers, and life science companies. And, you know, we have a very detailed work plan going into the next year and, you know, real optimism in terms of the future of canola and its growth and so on. So we would prefer if we had the full value chain together, and then Richardson's an important company, and we would hope that they would be able to be part of the Canola Council going forward. But in the meantime, we will carry on and do work on behalf of the industry.
Now, Everson expects there will be some fallout at the Canola Council as a result of Richardson pulling its funding.
There is an impact. In 2018, we will have a reduced budget somewhat as a result of changes with the council's budget. But as I say, we will carry on the work of the council going forward. And we hope through the discussions that we have in 2018, and we have a chance to have Richardson be part of the council again in the future.
The canola industry is evolving, and the Canola Council of Canada has to keep in step.
What's interesting here is that, you know, I think the canola sector, the environment in which the sector works, it changes to some extent. You know, canola was a small crop at one time, and now it's a much, it's the most valuable crop in Canada, more acreage than wheat. You know, it's our biggest export of any product from Canada to China. You know, so it's a different environment than it was. There's lots of mergers and acquisitions going on, especially in the life sciences sector. You know, there's the changes to the wheat board. You know, the environment is changing quite a bit, and the Canola Council has to change with that and make sure it's serving its members. So we certainly recognize that, and I think those are some of the issues that Richardson has been raising. But the interesting thing about it is that it's a broad value chain. You know, there's producers, as you mentioned, involved, and they have an opinion on things, and so the processing community and the life science community. So, you know, what the association has to do is look at these issues and to do its best to find a consensus among the various members of the value chain. The council in historically has been very good at doing that, and we will do that now. And, you know, Richardson has raised some important issues, and the Canola Council is addressing them.
Everson says it's difficult to put a dollar value, or a dollar figure rather, on the value that the Canola Council provides to its members.
Measurement's a challenge, you know, it always is in things like market development and market access, where you work, you know, constantly on it. And sometimes it's hard to measure exactly what works and so on. But, you know, when I look at the Canola Council's role working with the Prime Minister, the Government of Canada and the Prime Minister to get an agreement between the Government of Canada and China with respect to the blackleg issue and so on, and you recall that issue last fall, you know, that's a market that's worth $2.7 billion a year to Canada. And through the work of the Canola Council, we were able to, you know, get that to the highest level of the government and get a commitment to that for a period of 4 years. You know, that's a $10 billion value, really, to the industry, and making sure we keep that market open. So I think it's difficult sometimes to measure it, but I think there is value there. And the question for the board of directors, you know, and the membership here at the council is just to get that value equation right.
Jim Everson is president of the Canola Council of Canada. It's 12:27. Still with canola, Jessica Weber from the Western Applied Research Foundation at Scott was one of the presenters last week during Crop Week in Saskatoon. She talked about research being conducted at the Scott, Indian Head, and Melfort research facilities to determine safe levels of phosphorus for canola.
So there was a three-prong objective for this study. We looked at whether or not the current recommendations are adequate for the high-yielding cultivars, whether or not there's a difference between sideband and seed place, and is that location-dependent. And the third is that we're looking at the current recommendations, are they adequate for the knife openers and hoe openers that we're using versus the disc drills.
Now, Weber says there was some difference from seed placement and explains.
Well, at Scott, we have quite a more of a coarse texture, so we have a lot of sandy loam, and we also have a very low organic matter content, whereas if you look at Melfort and Indian Head, they have a higher organic matter content, a much more higher clay content, so that plays a large role into the effects of the phosphorus and the ammonium sulfate.
Weber says seed placement wasn't nearly as big a factor in the testing done at Indian Head and Melfort.
Absolutely. So at Scott, we've seen that there was quite a treatment effect looking at the rate and seed placement interaction. So at side banding with those higher rates of phosphorus was quite advantageous compared to seed placed, particularly when you added phosphorus with your ammonium sulfate.
So what are the key takeaways for farmers?
Well, the first thing they're always going to want to look at is the type of implement you're using, if you're using a hoe or a knife, or if you're still using that disc drill. Secondly, you're going to want to look at your location, what kind of organic matter you have, your clay content, things like that. And then overall, you're just going to want to be careful not to add any ammonium sulfate. We're finding that any addition of that is quite negative in most soils. So you just want to be careful with the product selection that you're using.
Weber says they hope to continue with their research.
Well, we're certainly going to be doing the 2018 year, and then depending on what we find, I'd like to dive a little bit deeper because we're seeing that perhaps we should be reevaluating the recommendations. So I'm hoping from this that we'll be getting a little bit more funding, a little bit more interest from collaborators, and maybe expand this to a few more sites throughout the province and then possibly into Alberta.
Jessica Weber is a researcher at the Western Applied Research Foundation at Scott. She made a presentation last week during Crop Week in Saskatoon. It's 12:29 now. AgriView is next.
GX94, AgriView.
The NAFTA talks move to Montreal next week, and Quebec Agriculture Minister Laurent Lessard plans to be present for part of the discussions. Supply management, the quota and price control system that ensures a stable income to dairy and poultry farmers despite market fluctuations, is crucial in Quebec. The Americans have the system in their crosshairs in the trade talks. A tweet posted by the Quebec Agriculture Department this week includes a photo of two children looking at a pair of cows. The caption reads, "Supply management, because our family farms are important." CP Rail says it had its best fourth quarter ever to close out 2017. Net income reported $984 million on revenues of over $1.7 billion. The railway's full-year net income for 2017 topped $2.4 billion on over $6.5 billion in revenues. CP moved about 115,000 carloads of grain in the fourth quarter, down 4% from a year earlier, while revenue per carload rose slightly. The railway's full-year grain handle came in at 440,700 cars, up 2% from 2016. A market analyst says green peas have regained their price premium over yellows. Errol Anderson is with ProMarket Communications in Calgary.
Green pea bids track Vancouver are now trading about $50 to $60 a metric ton over the yellows. And this suggests that the number two green pea bids should range $7.50 upwards to about $8.25 per bushel into the spring market.
As for yellow peas,
there is some good news in the pea market in that there are now some cash trades occurring, but contracts for yellow peas are largely deferred until that April-May period. Overall, pea stocks are backing up in the system. Processors may not have a bid right now, but elevators generally do have a bid. Number two yellow pea bids did briefly break below $6 per bushel in the November market, but since then there's been a modest recovery. Number two yellow pea bids are now heard between about $6.25 upwards to about $6.75 per bushel delivered.
Pea protein is considered cheap for human consumption, but with India's stiff duties, Anderson says new markets must be found to support further pea price gains. Switching now from peas to canola.
Canola market is just chopping in a narrow sideways range. March canola swayed in a quiet 490 to 495 a metric ton range. Exports to China have definitely slowed down since mid-December. Plus, South American soybean crop conditions have improved. 2017-18 canola carryout come July 31st is expected to be more than double year goal levels and should exceed 2.5 million metric tons in our view. Currently, March does have heavy resistance just under $500 a metric ton, and the support is seen around 483.
Errol Anderson is an analyst with ProMarket Communications in Calgary. The global wheat glut is getting larger. Reporter Rod Bean at the USDA says wheat growers are facing bigger supplies across the world, especially because of Russia's record crop.
More wheat is expected to be produced globally in this marketing year, with the Agriculture Department increasing its production forecast by 1.8 million tons from the previous month. World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Seth Myers says this is solely based on Russian wheat production.
We raised that Russian crop another 2 million metric tons. Just an amazing crop. They had record yields last year that we thought were off the charts. Well, it's off the charts this year compared to that year. So just big winter wheat yields, big spring wheat yields, record crop.
And although world wheat ending stock estimates were slightly reduced this month, they remain at a record large amount for 2017-18. Meanwhile, a recent 10% reduction in U.S. wheat stocks led to an impact of lower feed and residual use on the domestic balance sheet. Yet the season-ending average price for wheat remains unchanged from December, still at $4.60 a bushel at the midpoint. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
China plans to hold government officials to account for the protection of farmland as part of its efforts to guarantee food production amid soaring levels of urbanization. According to new guidelines issued yesterday, local governments will be held fully responsible for retaining and protecting arable land under their jurisdiction and for improving land quality. Government funding for soil remediation projects will depend on how well a local government performs when it comes to protecting land. Food security has long been regarded as a key source of political legitimacy for the Chinese government, with the country having to feed nearly a quarter of the world's population with just 7% of the world's arable land. But its farmland has come under increasing pressure due to soaring rates of urbanization and industrial development, which have encroached on traditional farming belts and left large stretches of territory unusable as a result of pollution. The great water debate is heating up between those in the Quill Lakes area and those trying to protect Last Mountain Lake. The Quill Lakes Watershed Association wants to drain runoff water into Last Mountain Lake and suggests it would have very little impact on the lake and its connected rivers and streams. On the other side of the argument, the Saskatchewan Alliance for Water Sustainability wants to prevent water from the Quills going into Last Mountain Lake, citing saline water, pollution, and invasive species. Dwight Odeline farms in the Quill Lakes area. He says if something isn't done before another big storm, there could be devastating effects.
No one knows what the weather is going to do, of course, but, you know, another year like 2017 and the lake will recede a bit. You do the math, another year like 2010 and spill point will be breached. A year like 2011 following that, that'd be disastrous.
Odeline says a dam was built in the 1950s to prevent a river from flowing between the Quills and Last Mountain Lake. Now, he says people have told him that before the dam was built, water flowed downstream to Last Mountain Lake normally. An Ontario man has pleaded guilty to animal cruelty after more than 1,500 pigs died at a farm southeast of London, Ontario. Animal welfare authorities say he pleaded guilty to multiple charges, including permitting an animal to be in distress. He'll be sentenced in April. SPCA officers were called to the farm last February due to concerns about the welfare of pigs on the property. Hundreds of dead and dying pigs were found inside a flooded, manure-filled barn, and about 250 had to be euthanized on site. And New Brunswick has released a new guidebook to help local farmers, fishermen, and other food and beverage producers promote and market their products online. The guide was developed in cooperation with students from the University of New Brunswick, who identified the need for a resource that teaches producers how to market their businesses and products on social media platforms. The 28-page tool includes instructions on how to use Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and LinkedIn as promotional tools. And that's today's Ag Review. It's 12:39 now. We have the Livestock Market Report coming up next.
Livestock Market Conditions.
Livestock futures are down in trading this afternoon. February live cattle, 121.55, down 40 cents. April live cattle, 122.52, down 95 cents. March feeder cattle, 145.37. That's down a buck 80 this afternoon. April feeder cattle, 145.65, down $1.72. February lean hogs, 72.15, down 90 cents. And April lean hogs, 75.55, down 35 cents. And those are the latest U.S. livestock futures. We'll check on the grain prices coming up in about 8 minutes from now at 10 to 1. The Canadian Meat Council is urging the federal government to sign on to the comprehensive and progressive Trans-Pacific Partnership. Marcus Mattinson is communications manager with the Canadian Meat Council.
Essentially, the comprehensive and progressive Trans-Pacific Partnership is a little bit longer way to say it's the new TPP, excluding the United States, of course. And so this deal includes all nations that were included in the previous TPP. However, this agreement is to be negotiated with the United States absent. So it's very similar. We're obviously very supportive of this new agreement, and we're advocating for this one just as much as we were advocating for the last one. So we think it's a great opportunity.
Why do you say that, Marcus? Why do you think it's so important that we're part of this TPP agreement?
Well, as you know, the red meat sector in Canada is highly, it's a very big trading industry. So it's a big industry that exports. The Pacific market is, not only is it a growing economy, and a growing market for our products, it's also important to note that they already are one of our largest clients, one of our largest export destinations for Canadian red meat. And so that's important to keep in mind. Really, it's about Canada has a choice to make, and this is about whether we want to continue to expand in this region of the world, or do we want to forfeit this region of the world for other economies to take advantage of? You know, just recently in December, the European Union concluded their negotiations with Japan. And so we have to move quickly on this if Canada wants to have the competitive advantage.
And Mattinson says it's important that we conclude these discussions quickly so that Canada can gain a competitive advantage in the Pacific region.
This is all about getting there first, to having the competitive advantage over other markets, most notably the European Union. It's also about protecting jobs. You know, the loss of Japan, for example, this is one of Canada's most valuable markets in this industry. We're talking about jeopardizing 20% of our current global exports for meat, and that translates to about 14,000 jobs as well. You know, this also really throws a wrench into the sector's ability to contribute to the Government of Canada's agri-food export goal, and that's about $75 billion by 2025. So there's a lot at stake here. It's not only about the incredible amount of business, the potential, but it's also about what we already have in number of jobs in this country that that are here because of the trade that we do with these countries. So there's a lot at stake here.
Mattinson goes on to add,
we're big believers. We think Canada's product is, you know, among the best in the world. People want our product. They want our red meat. They, you know, this market is especially wants Canadian product. We have a quality product. So that's important to state, first of all. Second of all, if we're not part of this deal, we can't compete, period. It's about, we're talking about, for example, for beef, the tariff would immediately drop to match the level of Australia in Japan at about 27%. And then that would lower every year by 9% for countries signing on to TPP. Now, if Canada doesn't sign on, Canada remains at a 38.5% tariff on beef in Japan. That is a gap that will continue to get larger and larger every year by 9%. And so it's critical that Canada takes this seriously. Essentially, we can't compete in that region if we don't sign on.
Marcus Mattinson is communications manager with the Canadian Meat Council. Again, NAFTA renegotiations continue next week in Montreal. The general manager of Manitoba Pork says elected officials in the U.S. and ag leaders that he's spoken with want to see NAFTA improved in a way that will increase the volumes of trade among the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. Recently, state, ag, and rural leaders hosted a summit in Kansas City, Missouri. Andrew Dixon is the general manager of Manitoba Pork.
In the United States, all politics is local. So what happens is that if there's going to be any sort of trade cases, they tend to get started at the local level first in terms of pressure for the federal government of the United States to act. So we are very cognizant of that. And so the more we can dispel myths about what goes on in Canada in terms of our industry and push and promote principles of and benefits of free trade between the two countries, it's to our benefit. And also, and we find friends in the United States. They're looking for allies on this matter, and they want us to reach out and talk to their compatriots about the benefits of free trade and how it impacts back at the state level and the benefits it brings. And something like 30 in the United States, in 30 of the states, Canada is their main export market.
Dixon says while U.S. President Trump may not be a big fan of NAFTA, most state and ag leaders are.
They recognize Canada invests in the United States and creates jobs and activities and services for their people, the same way America invests in trades with Canadian companies and markets directly to Canadian consumers. And we play to each other's strengths in these areas. And it was very clear to me from the people I talked to, they looked to Canada as a partner in growing business, both in agriculture and other industries. So you get the occasional concern about somebody getting some mutual advantage over another, but I didn't run into anybody who was totally against Canada and wanted to see NAFTA wrecked. In fact, it was the exact opposite. They want NAFTA to stay in place, and in some of its quirks to be fixed, and so that we can improve or increase the volume of trade that goes between the two countries.
Dixon says NAFTA and free trade in general is critical to the economic success of Manitoba.
If we don't export our products to important markets like the United States and to other countries, like we're very concerned about the Trans-Pacific Agreement for the 11 countries that are still in. We're very concerned about negotiating a free trade agreement with China. We have to have trade agreements under which we have clear rules, and we're not at a disadvantage to the bigger powers like the European Union or the United States. Otherwise, be absolutely blunt, we won't have an economy that's growing. And if we don't have an economy that's growing, we don't have taxes flowing. And if we don't have taxes flowing, we won't have our healthcare programs, we won't have our education programs, and we won't be able to help families who are in difficulty through our family services programs. This is not just about agriculture. This is about trying to improve the economy of Manitoba for the greater good of all Manitobans.
Andrew Dixon, General Manager of Manitoba Pork. It's 10 to 1 now, and we'll check the grain prices and the commodities of presentation this afternoon of Mazer Group and Raynor Dean, your REMAX Blue Chip Realty Ag Specialist.
Commodities Update.
Canola futures are up in afternoon trading today. March, $496.10 a metric ton. That's up $3.50 from yesterday's close. May canola, $503. Up $3. March Minneapolis wheat, $6.09 and a quarter a bushel, down 1 and a quarter cents. March Kansas City wheat, $4.27 a bushel, down 2.5. March Chicago wheat, $4.22 and a half, down 2.75. March corn, $3.51 and three quarters, up a quarter cent. March soybeans, $9.77 and three quarters, up 4 and three quarters. And March oats, $2.58 and a quarter, that's down 1.5 cents. And that's the commodities update.
Farm Bulletin Board.
Farm Credit Canada Ag Knowledge Exchange events are coming up next week in Yorkton. On Tuesday, there will be a presentation on tax and the corporate farm. It goes from 1 till 4 next Tuesday afternoon at St. Mary's Cultural Center. The following day, Wednesday, January 24th, we'll have two presentations at St. Mary's Cultural Center. The first, from 9 till noon, will focus on how to build tax-saving succession plans. Then, in the afternoon, there will be a workshop on how to get more from your farm's financial data. This workshop will help participants gain better financial control of their farm business by learning and implementing best practice business management techniques. The events are complimentary for producers. Participants can register online at www.fcca.ca/agknowledge or call 1-888-332-3301. The Saskatchewan Beef Industry Conference will come is next week as well. Goes next Wednesday and Thursday in Saskatoon. Feature speakers include Dr. Joe Schwartz with McGill University, a scientist known for demystifying science and separating sense from nonsense. As well, Murad Al-Khatib, CEO of AGT Foods and the winner of the 2017 World Entrepreneur of the Year Award, will speak. The Saskatchewan Beef Industry Conference goes next Wednesday and Thursday at the Saskatoon Inn. You can register online at saskbeefconference.com. And the annual Saskatchewan Ranch Management Forum will be held in Moose Jaw next month. Saskatchewan Agriculture Regional Livestock Specialist Naomi Paley says the forum will run over 3 days, February 9th through the 11th, at Masonic Lodge in Moose Jaw.
This is the third annual one that is put on by the Ministry of Agriculture. So the Ranch Management Forum actually moves around from place to place in the province. So this year it's Moose Jaw's turn, and it welcomes producers from all over the province. We have different topics and speakers that come every year.
Paley says they have a long list of timely topics that will be discussed at this year's Ranch Management Forum.
We cover everything from soup to nuts, everything from calving management tips to finances and taxes, livestock handling, farm structure, feeding, artificial insemination, you know, you name it, we've got somebody there to speak about it. So it really covers the full gamut of production. It also touches on many forage management topics as well.
Paley will be the first speaker at the Ranch Management Forum on February 9th, and she'll talk about parasite resistance in cattle.
We did a demonstration project here through the Ministry of Agriculture this past year. It was on parasite resistance and some different methods to control parasites in cattle. So I was speaking about that. The topic is, what is eating your cows? Parasite resistance project.
Paley says parasite resistance can be a big problem for producers.
If you don't take any control measures, especially in situations where, you know, pastures have been used for numerous years and you have a buildup of the parasite eggs in the soil, you know, for years we've relied on ivermectin type of products, and they've been, you know, a shining superhero for us in terms of parasites, internal and external. But like anything, when you continue to use it over 25 years plus, you end up getting into a situation where you have resistance building up. And so that's what we're running into in Western Canada and right here in Saskatchewan, as our little demonstration proved that, yeah, we are starting to see resistance to ivermectin type of products. And so there are some other things you need to be doing, looking at some different products and some different management strategies to be able to combat that.
Paley says you can register for the Saskatchewan Ranch Management Forum up until the end of this month.
Kurt Pate is coming to us again from Montana. It's a great deal. So for 3 days of information and presentations and tours as well, it's $175, and that includes your meals as well. Registration is pretty simple. You just need to call our Agricultural Knowledge Center in Moose Jaw. It's 1-866-457-2377.
Saskatchewan Agriculture Regional Livestock Specialist Naomi Paley telling us about the annual Saskatchewan Ranch Management Forum coming up February 9th through the 11th at Masonic Lodge in Moose Jaw. And we'll close out GX on Agriculture now with our precision weather forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, and Russell regions. Mainly sunny this afternoon, wind west 15 to 30, high 3. Becoming cloudy tonight, wind west 10 to 20, overnight low minus 6. Then a mix of sun and cloud tomorrow, wind west 15 to 25, high minus 2. Cloudy on Sunday, northwest breeze 10 to 20, high minus 5. Mainly cloudy Monday, minus 4. And isolated flurries in the forecast for Tuesday, high minus 5. On the temperature roundup this hour, it's minus 11 in the Paw, minus 9 in Hudson Bay, minus 8 in Swan River. Dauphin reports minus 4, plus 1 in Shoal Lake, Russell, Roblin, Saskatoon, Wynyard, Wadena, and Kelvington. Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, 2 degrees. Regina, 0. Brandon checks in at 2. Along with Broadview, Mooseman, and Indian Head. In the Yorkton-Melville region, mainly sunny, west-northwest breeze at 26, maybe a little more than a breeze. Relative humidity is 80%, and our temperature is 2 degrees. And that's our time for today. Plan to join me again Monday afternoon at 12:15 for GX on Agriculture. I'm Rod McDonald.